From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov.
And I'm Annette John Hall.
Right now, over half of Philadelphia's recyclables aren't recycled. What happens to your cans and bottles depends on where you live. If you're in the northeast or northwest parts of the city, you're in luck.
Germantown, West Oak Lane, Mount Airy, Roxborough, Chestnut Hill, northeast, lower Taconian above, so that would be the far northeast.
That's Philadelphia Inquirer environmental reporter Frank Coomer. He says that if you don't live in any of the neighborhoods he just listed, your recycling is going to an incinerator. So why is this happening? The answer, it turns out, is pretty complicated, spanning all the way from your kitchen to China. Today's show, Reduce, Reuse, Incinerate, Recycling Philly Style.
What happens to the stuff that we put in our recycling bins?
Well, if you live in those neighborhoods that are not northwest or northeast, it is going to a waste-to-energy facility, which most people know of as an incinerator. There it's burned. It does produce trash to steam, they used to call it, I think, in the old days. So it does generate power. It is better than, according to the city, than just taking it to a landfill.
So we talked to some people along Baltimore Avenue in West Philadelphia whose recyclables are just going to an incinerator, and they were not thrilled.
It's a bummer. It's depressing.
But I didn't have no idea.
Well, if that's the case, why should we even separate them?
Yeah, it feels quite deceptive to be playing along with this blue bin game.
That stinks.
So part of the problem here is contaminated recycling. What does that mean exactly, that we're recycling stuff that can't be recycled?
Exactly. You know, they have food waste on them. People assume that what they're throwing in the single stream recycling is recyclable, and a lot of times it's not, like such heavy, rigid plastics, plastic bags, any number of items that really can't be recycled, or they're dirty, they haven't been cleaned. Say you toss a soda can in a trash can and it's a quarter full. That soda spills all over the papers in there. It spills over
and
the
so
other things.
And so they can't use those
exactly.
Either.
They need to be clean. They need to be rinsed. And
don't think a lot of people know that.
I don't think they don't. And if you've ever seen a recycling truck pull in and open its giant maw, as I've described it before, and all the recyclables spill out, there is a lot of liquid that comes rushing out with it. And that contaminates the papers, and papers that are wet and soaked are pretty much ruined.
So contamination is a problem. That doesn't explain why Philly is only recycling in some neighborhoods. And you talked to Scott McGrath, Philadelphia's environmental planner.
Exactly.
The areas that are actually being recycled is the northeast and northwest sections of the city. That actually also represents some of our better, cleaner tonnage. From an operational standpoint, it's much easier for us to move the material from the northeast and northwest to the waste management facility. So it's both an operational issue, and it's also looking at trying to deliver the better material.
How long has this been happening?
It's been happening since about October in the fall. The recycling market has been worsening since 2013, 2014, when China warned that it was going to start cracking down and indeed stop taking some recyclables. But it really accelerated dramatically in the spring of 2018, when China basically said, we are not taking any but the purest recycling loads. And this had a huge ripple effect through the U.S. recycling market, including Philadelphia.
And I guess we should note that China is one of the biggest recycling processors in the world.
China was by far the largest recycling processor in the world. And that was one of the problems. Basically, all the eggs were in one basket in terms of a recycling market, which is not a good thing. Philadelphia was once getting paid $67 or more a ton for its recyclables, and that was as recent as 2012. But by this year, it was being asked to pay $170 a ton to get rid of
what?
Its recyclables. And you can imagine that adds up. The recycling facility where Philadelphia used to take its stuff in West Philly at the Republic Services plant was bringing in a rate of 25 tons an hour some days. And Republic Services was getting stuck with all this contaminated recycling that it couldn't get rid of.
China would only take recyclables that were 0.5% contaminated. That's lower than 1%. That's not a lot, right?
Correct. Compared to Philadelphia, where 15 to 20% of the loads were contaminated at the time, you know, some municipalities might have levels as low as 1 to 5% contaminated. But Philadelphia, because it is a large city, it had a large amount of contamination. And its waste processors, its recycling processor was kind of stuck with all this material that couldn't be recycled.
And Scott McGrath, the environmental planner, talked about this.
Our residents have been almost too enthusiastic about recycling. We get a lot of really strange items that are put out curbside.
Containers from when you get takeout. I used to recycle plastic bags, like trash bags.
Styrofoam.
A pasta box that has like the little plastic on it where you can see the pasta. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Pots and pans are another item that we also see. Plastic hoses. I recently saw a vacuum cleaner in a recycling bin.
So the city finds out that China would no longer take our recyclables. The prices go up. What's the city's response?
So the city's response to the potential super price jump by its contractor was to not renegotiate that contract and to look for another short-term solution. So city officials cobbled together a very short-term solution, they hope, to send roughly half the recycling to be incinerated. That facility is in Delaware County, and the cost was about $63 a ton as opposed to the $170 a ton that its contractor had wanted. The other half of the recycling it agreed to send to Waste Management plant in Philadelphia for sorting processing to be recycled at a cost of about $78 a ton.
So we have this temporary solution that's more affordable, but is curbside recycling in danger?
The city says it's committed to recycling, and I believe them because I think most municipalities are. Recycling is a reality, and residents who are essentially consumers demand it. They want it. They like it. They don't want to see it go away. Right now, the city it says it's in negotiations to find a long-term contract. It won't release the names of the companies that it's negotiating with until it's final, but I believe city officials hope that they would have something within a month or two.
One of the reasons why we haven't told different areas specifically, oh, your stuff's going to the waste energy plant, is we don't want to discourage anybody. We want people to keep putting the material out, and we don't want people to get out of the habit of putting their materials out, because we're going to make a switch in the spring and get everything back going to a recycling facility.
Frank, I remember in the 70s when I was a kid, recycling was going to save our planet.
Right.
Now it seems like it's changed a little bit. Why should we care about this issue? Is recycling still like one of the best things we can do to save the planet?
Recycling is a very powerful tool. One of the best things we can do is to reduce the waste up front rather than think I can just use as much plastic as I want, because plastic is cheap, and that's why it's become so ubiquitous. And it's cheap because fossil fuels are cheap right now. So that could change with future markets. But for now, I think a lot of environmentalists would tell you anyway, the way to solve the recycling problem right now is to not produce so much of it.
There is one company that's working on that. WHYY's Alan Yu checked it out. Alan, tell me about TerraCycle.
So TerraCycle is a recycling company. It's based in Trenton, New Jersey, and it worked with a lot of major product companies, Procter & Gamble, Unilever. They make this consortium of companies make things that you may have heard of, like Häagen-Dazs ice cream, Tide laundry detergent. And so what they're doing is introducing reusable containers for these products. So how this would work is you could go to a grocery store that has this, and then you could buy Häagen-Dazs ice cream, say, in a reusable steel container.
Oh, it's steel?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then because it's a nice container, you pay, you know, a small deposit on the container. And then once you're done with, you finished eating all of the ice cream, you can take that back. You don't have to wash it. You take it back to the store. And then TerraCycle will collect that steel container, wash it, and it gets sent back to Häagen-Dazs. Häagen-Dazs refills the ice cream, and it becomes an ice cream container for someone else. And so the container doesn't get thrown away.
You know, Alan, this reminds me of the milkman coming and exchanging your milk bottles. It sounds like a really back to the future kind of idea. How excited are people about it?
So for my story, I talked to Maurice Sampson. He used to be the recycling program administrator for the city of Philadelphia, and he's still really up on what's happening in the recycling field.
Well, I think reusables is a gold standard.
He says that if this works, then this could be big because, you know, obviously you have these big companies signing on, so that gives this platform much more scale.
It's huge, quite frankly.
And also, he like you, remembers that, you know, that there was a time, and he remembers this distinctly, you know, back when people used to do this routinely for their soda bottles.
Yeah, there was a 2-cent deposit on them.
I think the idea is that there'll be actually a separate aisle, you know, like how right now you have an organic section. The idea is that there will be a reusable section.
Mm. So when do we expect this to roll out?
So the pilot for New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania should be sometime this May.
Soon.
Yep, that's right. And I think there are also pilots in France, in Paris, in London, and later in Canada.
So, Alan, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us about this.
Thank you very much for having me.
And that's it for the show. The Why is produced by me, Annette John Hall, and Alex Stern, with editorial direction from Katie Colinari. Eugene San also helped edit today's show.
John Musoni is Assistant Vice President of News Operations, and Sandra Clark is Vice President of News and Civic Dialogue. Got a comment? Tweet us at Jai Benyako, at Annette J.H., or at Alex Ray Stern.
And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back tomorrow.